CBSi on the World. I'm John Batch with Nathaniel Philbrick. The new book is Travels with George, In Search of Washington and His Legacy. At one point, Nat makes it clear that the original Travels with Charlie by Steinbeck had a phrase, you don't take a trip, the trip takes you. Well, we're about to take a trip to Washington, D.C. Nat, it's a swamp in the summertime. It was a swamp in the 19th century, literally. It was not healthy to remain in town when Lincoln was in the White House because of the perfume coming from the cattle yards. However, Washington wanted D.C., what is the District of Columbia, 10 by 10 miles, as the capital. Why? What did he see?
Well, he was convinced and had been for years, as his father had been before, as his brother had been before him, that the Potomac was destined to be what the Erie Canal would become, the waterway that would connect the American West with the East. He was just, his experience during the French and Indian War had confirmed it in his own mind, and it seemed it was in the midpoint of the country, halfway between Kittery Point and Savannah. He felt that all imperatives pointed to the Potomac River. It would also happen to be just a few miles up the river from Mount Vernon. And so he decided to not see it as an act of self-interest, but as something that was essential for the good of the country. And, you know, and it's tough. You can accuse Washington of an insider deal here. And yet I think he really felt, mistakenly so, because the Potomac never turned out to be the great thoroughfare of trade he had hoped. But he felt this swamp at the edge of a river was where the country's capital should be.
Back in Philadelphia, while Washington has been south, the argument is deepening between Thomas Jefferson, who sees himself as cautious about where the country's going and worried about monarchical instincts, especially mm-hmm. John Adams, who's affectionately called his rotundity of Massachusetts. And Alexander Hamilton, who has the idea of making national the debt that is borne by the states and concentrating the money power in a bank. And George Washington, who wants to have everybody get along but recognizes that these tensions are rising up. Thomas Jefferson will become the anti-federalist. All of this, however, describes the fact that Washington is setting a trend for them. And two places. One, Madison and Jefferson take a trip of their own while Washington is on the road. Where do they go and what do they discover, Nat?
Yeah. I mean, as Washington is finishing up his southern tour, trying to unite the country, Jefferson and Madison depart on a northern tour. Vermont has just become a state, and they decide to escape the pressures of office. They need to go on their own road trip. And make their way as far as Burlington, Vermont. They don't quite get there, but they get close. And Jefferson quite disingenuously tells Washington that he's doing it for his health. But as Hamilton will later learn, they meet with notorious anti-federalists along the way in New York City and in Albany and even in Vermont, and are in essence organizing the political resistance.
Remember that young man in the New York Harbor when he crossed from Elizabeth to New York? That was Philip Furneaux, who will become the editor of the National Gazette. Yes. That will be the Jeffersonian platform to hammer away at Adams, to hammer away at Washington, to hammer away at everything that we now understand to be America's success, including the fact that Jefferson wanted a small capital based on agrarian success. He saw America as an agrarian paradise and not industrial whatsoever.
Right. He felt actually that manufactories, textile mills, all that were anathema. That the ideal American was a farmer. And, you know, just the opposite of where Washington and Hamilton are coming from, where they're encouraging these kinds of things in the hopes that the only way to break our dependence on British manufactured goods is to have our own industrial revolution. And but not so Jefferson. And so he hires Freneau. Get this. I mean, he hires Freneau as a translator for the State Department, but really to be the editor of the opposition newspaper. And, you know, and he does. I mean, that's the thing about Jefferson. You can have differing political opinions, but he goes about it in such a sneaky, behind the back fashion without any kind of honesty when it comes to his role as a cabinet member in Washington's administration. And so it makes for a very difficult dynamic towards the end of Washington's first term and throughout his second term, as the political divisions Washington is hoping to keep at bay take over America.
Another man who was opposed to Washington and suspected monarchical instincts and then converts or comes around and takes a trip, James Monroe. I have this wonderful scene that you give us of Monroe riding into Boston in 1817. James Monroe is a genuine war hero at Trenton. He was a brave man. Mm-hmm. And yes. So he deserved that uniform. But it's wonderful to see that as he ages, he becomes, in his own mind, a Washington student.
Yeah, and this is what's really interesting about Washington's legacy. When Washington was alive, Monroe despised him, published a book about his time as French ambassador for Washington, and you know, accusing him of creating a virtual monarchy, all of these things. And yet, when Washington dies and the Federalist Party burns itself out during the War of 1812 and Monroe takes office after Madison, he says that, you know, the office of the president is the commands a country, not a party. And he decides the way to bring the country together is to do exactly as Washington had done almost 30 years before. He goes on a tour and, you know, gets a horse from a circus, gets a uniform manufactured, and does his best Washington imitation. And so, you know, this is the legacy of Washington. He was despised by the Anti-Federalists by the end of his administration. And yet, once those fires of partisan thing burn out and a new era comes, he can be revered as, you know, the originator, the first American president.
You quote Washington about settling differences in his cabinet. Although we may be a little wrong now and then, we shall return to the right path with avidity. That's a belief that Washington has. It's a uniting belief. And yet, Nat, you also correctly say first president, slaveholder, land baron, general, politician, a man who believed in a union. That would not be a believable character in a work of fiction, but it is in a work of history.
It is. And it gets to why the past is something we need to explore if we're ever going to have an ability to deal with the future, because we came from this paradoxical, combination of antithetical principles. And yet, despite all of the dishonesty of these positions, our aspirational sense as a country remains.
Nathaniel Philbrick, the author of Travels with George, In Search of Washington and His Legacy. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.